out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 261, the tiny, huge edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. 261 episodes, including this one, in the can. I think that's a pretty good number, but we're going for 262 the next time. That's just how it goes. All right, like I said, this is the Caffeination Podcast, located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com, and we're found all over the web and all other kinds of places, but that's the place we like to call home. That's the place where you can always find the newest and, I'd say, freshest content that's available from the Caffeination. So, you know, we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And all the other member shows, including this one, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. And they're all located over at techpodcasts.com. Now, I'm not really sure how my voice sounds to other people right now, but I know on the inside of my head, it doesn't sound normal. So we're just going to try and push forth, and hopefully I'll be able to get this done. I don't think I'm losing my voice like I was on Sunday night when I recorded episode 260. However, I do think, or rather I know, that I have a sore throat right now, and for some reason it's just not sounding the same way as it comes out, as it should. So we're going to hopefully try and mitigate that by not babbling on and getting right to the content. This is the tiny, huge edition because we found a preponderance of tiny, small little gadgets and tiny small little discoveries and tiny small little things that are making huge impacts on the world around us. I have no clue why everybody who has been investigating something tiny decided to put it out here today, but you know what? It's kind of interesting, kind of cool, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff that kind of fit in the same vein. You know what? If you squeeze something hard enough, it'll eventually put that square peg right in the round hole. The sponsor for today's show is GoToMeeting. We are absolutely thrilled to announce that GoToMeeting, the best way to conduct an online meeting, just got a whole lot better. Because GoToMeeting is now available for the Mac. Start online meetings on the fly or schedule them in advance. Everyone logs onto your meeting during a conference call and they see your desktop on their screens. It's just like they're standing right next to you. If you haven't tried GoToMeeting free, now's the time. For a free 30-day trial, please visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts for your free trial today. I never, absolutely never, tip my hat and tell you what I'm going to be reviewing in the very near future. I feel compelled to do this because I'm having such a fantastic experience, so I wanted to give you just a little bit of a heads up before the full review comes out. I'm reading a fantastic book called Slideology by Nancy Duarte, the person who runs the company Duarte Design, who did the presentation for An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore and did like a lot of the presentation design and works heavily with Gar Reynolds, the guy from Presentations, and another fantastic presentation design book. I was sent it by the fine folks over at O'Reilly Media. Yes, they're the same people who put the Llama books out for Pearl and all that other stuff. They have a really interesting little lineup of books over there, and they were kind enough to send me a review copy, and I am loving it. I'm about a third of the way through it. I'm trying to soak it in as I go, but I just wanted to give you a heads up and tell you how fantastic it is. And you know, you'll be able to see it probably by Sunday. I should have the full review up and out because I am absolutely in love with this book, and I'm finally getting a chance at night to sit down with it and spend the quality time that it's so rightly deserves. So I just wanted to give you the little heads up about Nancy Duarte's Slideology book, and you know, it's one of those rare books where you read it and you know that you're supposed to be learning stuff from it, but you can't help but enjoy the heck out of it to begin, you know, while you're there. I mean, it's I don't know about you, but I hate reading textbooks. I hate reading books that tell me how to do things. I'm not somebody who learns from books. I'm somebody who learns from messing up time and time again. And I'll read online guides and anything, but they have to be short. They have to be concise. And this book, for some reason, just wraps itself in just such a package where I can understand it, I can read it, and I can completely understand each individual topic as they're going along, and it's building such a fantastic dialogue as I read the book. So I had to just a little effusive praise before I actually put the review out. A little bit of bad form on my part, but you know what? It's all in really good in a good-natured way, at least I think so. Like, on to the other stuff that we're going to be talking about today. We have TechCruft, we have Caffeine and Food. It's a huge, interesting tiny huge little interesting episode that we got going for you today. We're going to dive right on into the real content. First up, we have an interesting article from over at ecogeek.org. It's entitled "Bacteria Make Ethanol Plants 50% More Efficient." What the article basically boils down to is that they've found out a certain type of bacteria actually feed off the waste produced from the process of making ethanol from corn. It's a very specific type of bacteria, and it's a very specific condition in which it's created, or in which the benefit is realized. But what happens is these bacteria feed off the waste products during the ethanol creation process. They release methane gas. The methane gas is then used to help fuel the ethanol plant, reducing the overall energy intake from the outside in order to actually run the plant, you know, the natural gas or whatever else they're using to actually run the plant, by over 50%. So the way the article runs down is they said ethanol, as it is right now, a standard run-of-the-mill variety ethanol plant, which is the additive that's currently being put into most gasolines, the energy that produces... the energy used to produce ethanol is roughly 26% less than the energy you get out of ethanol. So there's a plus 26% after the fact. So, you know, if you were to use ethanol to run an ethanol plant, you would get a plus 26 at the end. You know what I mean? It's not a zero-sum gain. You actually do gain a little. But with this process in place, that number shoots up to over 70%. So the amount of energy that you take off the grid is increased by 70% when you actually use this bacteria process. Now, apparently, there's a whole lot of other little things that go involved in actually creating this, but it's really interesting to see. This was originally discovered by the fine gentleman over at Washington University. So it's unbelievable. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine what it must have been like in that room when they started getting those test results back. You know, it's one of those things where this could be one of those once-in-a-lifetime discoveries, or this could yet be another blip on the radar of trying to find alternative energy sources. And while I know ethanol isn't necessarily alternative, and I know it's not necessarily the best thing in the world for food crops, because if people are growing corn to sell to ethanol plants, then they're not necessarily growing other crops for food, or they're not necessarily growing hops for beer, which I consider very bad. So that's one of the drawbacks of ethanol. But if they can make the process that much more efficient, I can't wait to see where this actually ends up. So it's yet a tiny little thing that's making a really big impact. Another little thing that we found out from over at Hackaday.com, apparently the researchers over at MIT, yes, I know they have a couple of them, but a group of researchers over at MIT have used a viral assembly method to create a battery half the size of a human cell. So They're basically saying that this battery is thinner than a human cell, like a skin cell, which, you know, you can pretty much just see with a magnifying glass or if you're really, really good eyesight, but I really doubt that. So it's incredibly thin, incredibly lightweight, and it was created using a virus. I don't even want to know what would happen if this virus were to get out of whatever lab it was used in. I mean, you could definitely see the Matrix kind of forming here, a little robotic overlord kind of overtint to that. And remember to send in your robot survival guides and appeasement stuff by episode 275. I'll give a firm deadline on that a little bit later on. This is one of those things where it's like, wow, this could end up being another, you know, paradigm-shifting advancement, because as computers have advanced and as processors have advanced and RAM and all that other stuff has gotten better and better and better throughout the years, the one area of technology, the one area that everything relies on is power cells, batteries and lithium ion, you know, cadmium, whatever is going into these batteries. The actual process for making them and the actual efficiency of them has not really gone up in anywhere near the same amount. So when you take a step back and you're like, okay, I have this fantastic new phone, it can do everything on the planet, and you look back at it and you say, you know what? The battery lasts 20 minutes. I think we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and cut out half of those unbelievable, life-saving, awesome features. So now as you start to see these different little advancements in battery technology, I think we're going to start seeing a whole new shift in technology towards thinner and towards more full-featured devices. I mean, or it could just be towards devices that use actual less power but are much more form factor compliant. They're much smaller, so they don't actually have to accommodate a massive battery attached to them. So obviously only a prototype, so we really don't know what this is going to end up doing. But hey, this is yet another one of those things where it's like you could say you heard it here first from the Caffeination Podcast. All right, up next is a company which is very tricky to say on a G-rated show. This is Fuchitech. And it's spelled slightly interesting, but it's hard to say quickly in mixed company with positive results, shall we say. There is an interesting little gadget that they're currently putting out. It's a palm-sized projector. Now, I understand that certain people need to present on the go. There's salesmen who always need to be able to present at a moment's notice almost. But I don't necessarily understand the need for a 640 by 480 native resolution projector in this day and age. That's basically smaller than your average Internet Explorer window is at default size. It's the... It's the old school resolution for most computers that were out in, let's just say, 1997, 1995 maybe. I mean, this is an incredibly tiny resolution. This is smaller than the resolution on the cheap digital cameras that come in cell phones. I mean, like, we're talking like the ones that you get with your plan. So, I mean, this isn't necessarily the end-all and be-all of projectors, but I think it's really an interesting idea that there actually is enough of a target market to create a tiny projector like this. So, I mean, if the advancements get to to such a point where we're actually able to see usable resolutions in projectors this small, I think it could be kind of interesting, but I don't necessarily see where the market is right now. I mean, hey, if you see it, please feel free to contact me and let me know. As always, it's caffeination@gmail.com, or you could contact us in any one of the other myriad of ways that we have up over there. Moving right along, we have an interesting little article. Now, this is going to be a quick hit, and we're gone. Japan demands a probe of the iPod Nano flameouts. This is from over at Slashdot. And, apparently, Japan has seen 14 incidents where iPods have gotten so hot, iPod Nanos specifically, have gotten so hot that they've burst into flames. And the people from Apple have responded by saying it's only a tiny percentage. Now, here's the only problem I have with this entire phraseology. First of all, I understand that there's been a rather bad batch of batteries periodically. Quality control standards dip. You know, we've had Dell's lighting on fire. You've had Apple's lighting on fire. Pretty much any kind of portable computer's been susceptible to randomly burst into flames over the past couple years. But this is one of the first instances I've seen of iPods, because, I mean, they were saying iPod batteries had been overheating before. There's one iPod which, out of the factory, blew up randomly. I would think that that's enough of an incident that you might want to investigate it just a little bit, because I don't care how many times you've downloaded what album or how many computers you can use the iPod on or how many different phone calls you can make with the iPod. If your iPod explodes, that's probably not a good feature. I don't think that should be built into any of the new versions coming out, and that should definitely not be in the next version of the iPhone. So please turn off the iBurn feature on the next iPod. I was on Facebook today and I saw a very interesting video being posted by a gentleman called by the name of Nightwise. You may know him from the Global Geek Podcast and friend of the Aussie Geek Podcast. Great guy, and interesting taste in clips that he puts up on Facebook periodically. This one was a clip of a woman named Emily talking about a facial recognition and facial manipulation software that was being put out there. And the more you talk, she's not staring directly at the camera. She's looking at a would-be interviewer off to the side. There's just something not right about her. And then you finally realize that she's fake. She's completely and utterly fake. And the more I go back and watch it, the more it starts to stand out further and further. And I guess the reason that they're able to fool so many people with this particular video, I have a link to three different things. One with a little bit of a discussion on it, and one the full video that Nightwise originally sent me in. And then one a link to Nightwise's website, because he has a great amount of information over there that if you like my show, you're going to love his stuff, because it's very heavy into the tech and really some cool stuff that he posts up over there. And he's been a great guy that's helped me out a couple times, so I highly suggest you head on over to his website as well. But the video, the more I look at it, the only reason that they had her staring off camera, and it was almost a fixed stare off camera, is because if somebody's looking directly at you, somebody's looking directly at the camera, there's so many random human-like movements that the eyes do. Now, human-like in us is human, but if you're trying to program something to be human, there's too many different idiosyncrasies that are involved in human movement and facial twitches and other things that the closer you get to being human, the more weird you appear. And it's called the Uncanny Valley. We've talked about it before. This software comes the closest I've seen ever to actually bridging that gap. It's unbelievable, and it's really detailed, and it's truly uncanny. I don't quite think that it's to the point where it's spooky, because it was originally it was an actress that was there, but it wasn't an actress in with motion capture or anything like that. This is a completely new technology, so you owe it to yourself to head on over there and check out the video. All right, up next we have an interesting little lamp. Now, if you've ever put a shoestring or a yo-yo or something like that on the floor, just the string, and you start to spin it around, you realize that you can actually, or if you've ever seen a lasso trick, you realize that you can actually pick it up off the ground. If you're spinning it at a sufficient speed, you can actually get it to bow and kind of twist and contort, and you can actually raise it up off the ground and do all kinds of interesting tricks with it. Now imagine doing this with a fiber optic piece. You would have the new light that's out, or it's a design idea called the Courage Lighting Series. Basically, imagine a series of fiber optic loops that go out of a base, loop down, and then come back up. The entire base will rotate and spin these fiber optic loops, and based on the desired amount of light that you would like to have, it will either spin them faster for more light, and it'll spread out the fiber optics. They show it with a couple different color schemes that are going, or it'll slow it down and actually have a more concentrated and duller lighting system. It's really cool, and I don't even know what else to describe it as. I mean, it looks like a cross between a light and a lightsaber. I mean, the really tiny, fine lightsabers. That's the only thing that comes close to what this could be. It's like if a ball of string was suspended from the ceiling and illuminated. It's electroluminescent wire is what it actually is. So it's really kind of interesting to see where different design pieces are being taken, and I don't even know what how it's going to be sold. I don't know if anybody's actually going to be able to afford it, but there's going to be really interesting kind of developments in this, and you can definitely see where that's going to head off. I have two different links to that, so you can actually check out both different things. Up next, we have an interesting little article called The MOE from over at yankodesign.com. It's a new take on a mower, and we've seen a lot of mowing robots. There's the iRoomba iMow, or whatever they're going to end up calling it. There's the other one that has a problem flipping over, but it does. The second version, they installed a sensor to allow it to shut off after it flipped over, and there was another one. You know, we've discussed it, and mowing the lawn's pretty much a chore that nobody really enjoys, and depending on how much lawn you have, you enjoy it less and less. I myself don't have a huge amount of lawn, but I don't enjoy having to go out there and mow it. I actually like longer grass as opposed to the short, neat grass. I don't know what's weird with me. But this MUI thing, which is MUWI, actually looks like a barrel with a wedge on the front. As it drives itself around, I don't know, I think this might just be a design concept at this point in time, but as it drives itself around, it's actually mowing the grass, and the clippings are actually contained within the barrel. When the clippings get up to a certain point, the barrel actually has a compression system within it to produce one of two quote-unquote toys. This thing actually drops or excretes one of two compacted grass clipping toys. One of them is either a disc that they say can be used as a seat, or another one is a ball that you can use to throw it around. Now, one of the interesting things over a device that they were talking about was that could you imagine actually trying to throw these things around and somebody has hay fever? You get hit in the face one of these, there's going to be a lot of droopy eyes and stuff like that. But I'm looking at it and going, you know what? Everybody keeps saying that these would be fantastic for compost, and I like the idea, behind it. I wonder if you would be able to fill it from the outside and still have it compact. So, because with composting, you can't just use long clippings. It doesn't work that way. You need brown matter and you need green matter. And I'm not just talking about leaving the long clippings out for a while. You need, like, the long clippings. You also need other things for, it's like nitrates and ammonia or something. There's a very detailed science that goes involved, and there's a lot of aeration, a lot of moving around. The aeration is where what I'm getting to here, though. If you're going to use compressed discs of lawn, basically, and try and mulch it, they're compressed. There's no air getting to the middle of it, so it's not really going to lend itself well. Or maybe it's just an easy way to pick up the grass and throw it in the trash. I mean, it could be one, it could be the other. I really like the idea in general. There's two very divergent topics actually dealt with in this thing, and it's usually when I say that we're talking about something with a little bit more heft to it, a little bit more seriousness, but this is something small. We're talking about Krispy Kreme donuts. I myself am a fan of Krispy Kreme donuts, and then we're talking about the British Isles. Apparently, there was a survey done of over 1,000 British workers, and they said that they felt that the disconnect from nature was making them miserable, basically. So what Krispy Kreme has done is actually create sod flip-flops. So these are flip-flops or sandals or whatever you want to call them, branded with the Krispy Kreme right across the thong in the front, which grows in between your big toe and the second toe, whatever you happen to call those particular toes, wherever you are. And looks like a standard flip-flop sandal, whatever it is, and then there's grass everywhere else. I know a lot of people like to put their feet in the grass, but this just seems a little bit of an overkill, and it could be a just a publicity stunt. I personally think it looks kind of cool. I would probably keep these on my desk. I would probably keep these somewhere else, but I don't necessarily think I would ever try and wear them, because I know after you trample on grass for a certain amount of time, it starts to get flat and mushy and nasty, and I'm pretty sure that would happen probably after the first block with these. I don't really think that the actual design is foolproof. I don't really think that it's going to last very long, but I think it's kind of interesting. All right, up next, insert your favorite Orca joke here. This could save lives. That's the tagline that I ran, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, except for the fact that I know for a fact that in the movie Free Willy, the scene where the orca actually jumped over the boy, that's not actually the original actor they had to play the movie. They filmed that scene first in case the whale missed. That's the only orca joke I know. But the orca is actually a digital man overboard alarm that knows who fell and where to save them. It's a system that the Navy is currently looking at in reference to military ships. So basically, everybody would be wearing a dog tag or some other transponder on themselves, which is already kind of standard military issue. And when they get wet, they would actually set off an alarm that would be triggered on the ship's bridge. So there's no, you know, one sailor tells another, or another person tells somebody, and then they have to run the entire length of the ship. There's no radio miscommunication. It goes right to the bridge and alerts somebody that there's a man overboard, and it tells you exactly where he is. So it's kind of like a homing beacon on that person. There's also an all-clear alarm in case somebody ends up wearing it in the shower. I think this is probably by far one of the best inventions that I've ever seen. And this is not really, when you consider how much, you know, airplanes and stuff cost, this is not really a large expenditure. Basically, they're being given $19 million, which for you or me, if we were given $19 million, we probably wouldn't do anything for a while. But if the Navy spends $19 million on something, it's probably like a case of beer. I mean, you know, I think the airplanes that actually get sent overseas and the airplanes that are actually built are like $1.5 billion airplanes just for one, and they already know what it's going to look like at the end. So this is to build an entire new system, and it's going to end up saving lives. So I really think this is an awesome idea. Moving right along, we have a little article from over at Ogizmo that I could not pass up. First of all, because it told me something that I did not originally know. Not that I know everything out there, but this told me something that I didn't know in a different way. Basically, there's a series over at Ogizmo called The Games We Played, where they end up showing you different games that you might remember from yesteryear. And the game that they're actually showcasing right now is one from Tiger Electronics. It's Tiger Electronics Baseball. There was two buttons on the front of the thing. One said batter, one said run player. You'd hit the one to swing the ball, and you'd hit the other one to advance from base to base. You never ended up playing defense. And I remember having this game from when I was young. It's dated 1987 on the back, which is probably right around the year I got it. What I did not know is that it's the first game that Tiger Electronics ever made with this form factor. I had other games after the fact, and I do remember that my parents hated the noises that this thing made, and that it eventually broke because the two little, if you actually look at the picture over there, there's two little music notes. To a, if you push that button, it allows you to turn off the sound to the game. That button was broken on mine eventually, and it's not because I really wanted to have the sound on, but it's because after a while, if you keep pushing the button to turn the sound off or on or something like that, and you couldn't plug headphones into this or anything like that, after a while, if you keep pushing that button, it starts to wear out, so you have to push it harder. And I eventually used a pen and kind of broke the thing, but it was probably one of the most fun video games that I ever had, and it's the cheesiest. It is the absolute cheesiest video game that I've ever had, so I wanted to pass it along because I thought it was really cool, and maybe somebody else out there remembers this or other games like that. All right, up next we have an insane story. Talk about little things that are making a huge difference. How about a GPS-enabled turtle? Well, turtles are actually small, and the GPS unit that's on it is even smaller. It's not really huge, but apparently, they don't adequately explain this for my tastes, but apparently a turtle equipped with a GPS device, and we've already covered that, was wandering through a state park outside of Chevy Chase in Maryland, and it stumbled across a crop of marijuana, and a gentleman had been growing it in the middle of a state park to hopefully avoid the authorities, but he actually got snagged by a turtle. Now, what I never found out about the story, and I'm going to keep looking, is whether or not, A, the turtle was working for the feds, because if it was, that's a smart turtle, and I think they should keep using him, because they do live long lives, so you're not going to end up having to pay his pension until he's like 75, 80 years. But the other thing I'd want to know is, like, how did they actually find out that he had found marijuana? I mean, did the turtle come back and he had bloodshot eyes? These turtles naturally have red eyes. Every time he came home, somebody would be questioning him. So I'm not really exactly sure how the entire situation happened, or maybe just somebody, like a good-natured scientist, released the turtle back into the park in the hopes of tracking his whereabouts or something like that, and he ended up in one place that just so happened to be near a marijuana farm. I mean, I don't know exactly how that went down, but I think it's pretty cool. So, and the little blip that they have from over at techdigest.tv is there's no, you'd never count on that. Even the most meticulously planned crimes in history have not made allowances for what could happen if a GPS-enabled turtle stumbled onto the crime scene. So you know what? I heartily agree with the gentleman over there, and you know what? I don't think that I would ever commit a crime just in case there may be a GPS-enabled turtle in the immediate vicinity, unless I could actually run a little bit quicker than the turtle, which may or may not happen. So, and but planting things is a very sedentary crime, and you're kind of tied to the spot, so I could see where they would have issues. All right, moving right along, we have yet another Lego article, but if you have a Mac and you like Legos, this is going to be the program for you. This is called Bricksmith. It's a virtual Lego building set. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but it recently came up over at freedownloadaday.com, which means, you know what, it's free. So if you have a Mac that's running OS 10, 10.4 or later, be it PowerPC or Intel Mac, you can head over there, download this thing, and build to your heart's content. Not only can you use it to build things, you can also use it to plan out your current Lego projects. And while I have a Mac at home, I would really love to have this for the PC, because the computer that I'd love to play around with it alone is actually my desktop, and that's a PC. So it's one of those things where you just have to pass it along, and that kind of dovetailed very nicely into this other story. Tiny little bricks can actually make a difference. On Your Mark, Get Set, Go, over from thedailymail.co.uk, Lego. Welcome to the Olympics, where everyone's quick off the blocks. Apparently, somebody has decided to use more than 300,000 Lego bricks and 4,500 Lego people to create a display of the Beijing Olympics. I mean, this is accurate as much as you can be with the Legos, and there's certain set scale with the bricks. But they built the Bird's Nest Stadium. There's actually even a soccer pitch on the inside with the correct number of players on it. There's the water cube with the pool inside and fun little banners and everything. I think the banners are the only thing that aren't actually Lego. There's people actually swimming in the pool, yes. There's a beach volleyball court. There's table tennis outside. There's all other kinds of things. There's medal ceremonies. It's just insane. There's even an equestrian stables and an equestrian track and mini cyclists saddling up. I mean, they have almost all the events. The only ones I didn't see were taekwondo and, like, wrestling. So if you enjoy a good Lego jaunt through the Olympics, you might want to head on over there. Which, as a small side note, somebody recently passed along a website that I'm not going to share here because it went down shortly after I was trying to use it. But apparently, my site is now blocked over in China. I don't know why. Could be because any one of the number of little articles I've put out there recently, but I always thought I kept kind of a fair and balanced little show going. But so I know we had at least half a dozen listeners in China, and if you ever end up listening to this show again, I'm entirely incredibly sorry that you're missing out on the content right now. I don't think I'm incredibly offensive to the powers that be in Beijing, but apparently I may or may not be. So if you send me a direct mail, I might be able to forward you the link to the tool that I was using to actually check it out. If you run a website, it might be interesting to see if you too are blocked, or it could have just been a blip and I'll check it out again tomorrow. But as of right now, no go. Now, the last little thing that we have in TechCruft is a giveaway. Now, you're probably really glad you listened this far. There's a service that I'm currently on the beta to. It's called Dropbox. So if you go over to getdropbox.com, you will see. Basically, it's an online storage utility. And everybody's seen these before. There's no encryption on it yet. However, it's an interesting way of syncing files between computers. You can either download a client, which will designate one folder on your computer as a Dropbox, and every time you install the client on another computer, it will automatically synchronize all the files that are under that folder. Or you can go online to the website and download specific files. This has been the best and the most unbelievable part of the service, because I was using the service on my laptop, and they give you 2 gigs right off the bat. I had probably around 3/4 of a gig of documents that were actually in there, and I was using the Dropbox in place of my documents folder on the Mac, just because I was doing a lot of writing, and writing doesn't really take up a lot of space. And I went to work, and I needed a report that I had on my laptop, so I was able to go online to getdropbox.com, log in, pull the file that I had down. It was the wrong file, because apparently I had either saved it wrong or something had happened in transition. I was able to actually go back to a previous version of the file. I mean, this is a really neat little service, and I have a couple invites. I'm going to say I have 5 right now, and the first 5 people to email me after the show is over, obviously, because if I'm still talking right now, then I kind of need to encode the MP3, upload it, and, you know, but whatever. All you need to do is email me to caffeination@gmail.com to give me Dropbox. That's all you have to do. In the title, just put give me Dropbox, and I will send you an invite code. I got 5 up for grabs for the first 5 people that come in with this. So enjoy. Let me know what you think of it. I'm really kind of enamored of the service as it is right now. I would love to have an encrypted option. There's also a sharing option, so there's a bunch of fun little things that are going on there. So I just wanted to kind of pass it along. Thought it was pretty cool. All right, on to the caffeine and food section. Now, we have a story right up front where I wasn't really sure where this would end up, but it ended up getting shifted a little bit more towards the food. This is from over at Gizmodo.com. It's called the Electronic Sandwich. Thanks, Mom. Basically, this is a whole new take on the word breadboard. It's a circuitry project which was built into a piece of toast. I am pretty sure it's actually toast, but because I think you have to actually take all the moisture out of the bread in order to do this correctly. But it's a standard little circuitry project. However, when you close it up, it looks like a sandwich. However, when you turn it on, the sandwich glows with a very unearthly light. I think it would actually be interesting to have it glow with the unearthly purple light from one side and orangish light from the other to be a true peanut butter and jelly. Or this would be even more fun as a prank to hand it to somebody and somehow have like either a remote or a switch that you hold in your hand, and as they touch it, turn it on so it glows. I mean, I just think that would be cool, so I'm going to pass it right along. All right, up next we have an article from Mopo.ca, and this is Blair's Hot Sauce 16 Million Product Review. Now, I'm going to tell you, I love hot sauce. I have hot peppers growing in my backyard right now. I am a fanatic about certain types of hot sauce. I like hot sauce that most other people don't necessarily enjoy. I will never ever buy Blair's Hot Sauce 16 million because hot sauces and all hot things with capsaicin, which is the actual chemical compound that makes things hot, are rated on a scale called Scoville units. Now, pure capsaicin, the actual pure essence of what makes a hot pepper hot, is 16 million Scoville units. That is what this is as close to getting as you can. So using products that are off the shelf, using whatever peppers or whatever other things they use to create this, this is as close to pure capsaicin as is possible. So I don't necessarily know how you would put this in your mouth without getting a chemical burn. And I got to read you this tiny little bit that was up there. It says, first bite was not that hot, so I had the wife take a bite. She threatened to divorce me once she could speak again, so I tried it again. Then it was hot. So I took a few more bites and had to toss the rest of the pot away. I don't even know what kind of pot they were talking about. I can only assume like a pot of chili or something like that, and they used this to actually cook with. I got to tell you, this is not a cooking hot sauce. This is a collector's item that you put on the shelf, and that's pretty much it. The hottest hot sauce that I have right now, I don't even know what it's rated in Scoville units, but it's called Possible Side Effects, and I can only use it in, like, micro dots. I put a tiny little piece on a pretzel, and I can eat the pretzel, and it you know, makes your eyes water, makes you sweat under the eyes. It's really, really good hot sauce. I remember a time when I wasn't thinking too clearly, and I actually put it on a burger like I was going to put ketchup on a burger. So there's a lot of this hot sauce on the burger. I took one big bite of it and swallowed it, and I felt my throat start to swell up. That's how hot this stuff is. So if this stuff, which is significantly less than 16 million on the little sliding scale they got there, is a little bit of a fiery inferno, then I'm not about to go the whole hog on this. I do know a lot of people who like crazy hot, but I don't know if anybody likes that kind of crazy hot. Moving right along, first it was vodka, now it's Mountain Dew. Apparently there's another version of this I just didn't see before, but Mountain Dew limited edition. These are green art labels. So I just thought these were kind of cool and would pass them along. But basically six different artists from popular culture have kind of teamed up to make six different bottles of Mountain Dew. I really like this idea, and I'm somebody who collects different bottles of alcohol after they've already been emptied, and I really kind of like the aesthetic that different bottles have, and it's just interesting to see the design. I don't necessarily know if I would go around collecting Mountain Dew bottles, but I know a couple people who might, so this is kind of an interesting little thing to play around with. All right, up next, the next to last little thing that we have here is actually the Stockholm Sneaker Burger. Apparently, for those of you who out there who are insane about sneakers, and I know I was unaware, but there's a large community of what people call themselves sneaker nerds who will like follow different designers around and will actually buy extra sets of sneakers just not to wear them. I pretty much consider sneakers a necessary evil, so I never really considered actually saving a pair and not wearing them. I kind of wear them until they fall off my feet. Apparently, a store in Stockholm, which was holding a Nike launch party for a new kind of sneaker, contracted with a local artist to actually come up with something inventive and new. So he came up with a burger that is basically shaped like the sneaker in question. It's kind of interesting. There's an interesting little tilted roll. It actually does look like a sneaker, and from far enough away, it looks like a really ugly sneaker, but from close enough up, it just looks like a badly constructed burger. So I thought it was kind of cool. This is from over at vice.typepad.com, so you can head on over there and check that out. And then the last little thing is PepsiCo is preparing to distribute Sao tea. Yes, the ready-to-drink variety of the tea bags that you see in Starbucks's. And you know what? I'm not a real big fan of them. I think they're interesting. I think they have pretty good flavors that are out there. I don't particularly like their black tea variety, whatever they call Awake. I don't necessarily think that it's a good representation or a good representative sample of what that type of tea is routinely supposed to taste like, because I've had pure, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, and I meant to look this up. I've had that tea pure, I've had regular loose tea variety of it, and it tastes so much better than the Awake variety that I don't know if it's just that Starbucks picks randomly bad samples, or if it was just because it was in a bag and I was using loose tea, which is quite possible. But I think this is kind of an interesting match, and I'd be really glad to see some of the different brands actually come out there. I mean, we've already had Lipton and Snapple, and there's a whole bunch of other teas that are out there. But to actually see something that's more along the lines of a gourmet flavor, at least that's the kind of branding that they're probably going to end up going for, it's kind of interesting to see it enter into the space. I wonder exactly how much sugar is going to be in it, because that's usually the killer for me. I don't really like heavily sugared drinks, so just putting that out there. All right, this has been Caffeination number 261. Thank you so much for listening. It's been kind of a crazy little episode. It cut and paste, a lot of coughing on my part, a lot of just mental miscues, but we're keeping it all together. One last final reminder, PodCamp Philly, if you're going to be in the Philadelphia area September 6th and 7th, please head on over to PodCampPhilly.com. If you would like to register, tickets are $20 and all of the proceeds go to charity. And you know, all the information's over there. Please head on over there and check that out. And, you know, the Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here, there, and everywhere. It's over at techpodcasts.com. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Caffeination 261. Stay caffeinated, people.